But no, it's been quite difficult sitting on it for the last 3 weeks.
Diana, Princess of Wales, was born Diana Frances Spencer in 1961. Her family had been wealthy landowners since the 16th century, and they had close ties with the royal family. As a child, Diana grew up in a house on the royal estate at Sandringham in Norfolk. The first time she remembered meeting Prince Charles was in 1977, when she was invited shooting by her elder sister. "I was always paired off with Prince Andrew, Prince Charles's younger brother," she joked in an interview just after her engagement. Shortly after leaving school, Lady Diana took up a job teaching in a kindergarten in London. Life changed dramatically for Lady Diana in 1980, when, suspecting a possible romance with Prince Charles, the press started to follow her everywhere. With her every move under public scrutiny, the pressure on a 19-year-old must have been intense, but the way she reacted impressed everyone. Lady Diana gave up her teaching job at the end of 1980, and the engagement was announced in February the following year. The wedding took place in July, and Lady Diana became the Princess of Wales. Diana, Princess of Wales, was now public property. She appeared on the front of every woman's magazine and brought thousands onto the streets to meet her wherever she went. Her openness and charm, along with a refreshing spontaneity, made her one of the best-loved members of the royal family. Di mania swept not only Britain, but the world, as she travelled widely with the Prince of Wales. In 1983, they went to Australia with their first son, William, who was just 9 months old. On a later visit, the princess caused a minor sensation when she launched into an impromptu piano recital of Rachmaninoff at a summer music camp. On her first visit to the USA with the Prince of Wales, public interest was overwhelming. The highlight of the visit was a glittering White House ball at which many show business celebrities and film stars were present. Former President Ronald Reagan remembered the occasion well.
I'd had an opportunity at dinner to hear of what she thought about some of, particularly the performing stars that were there. And so the dancing began, but yet she was the center of attention. The rest of the people were pretty much of an audience. So I managed to get word to John Travolta. She had mentioned approvingly during dinner to ask her to dance, to break the ice, because most of our people were a little hesitant about that. And he did, and they danced beautifully together, and it was a kind of high spot that I do remember in that entire evening.
If at first Diana attracted attention because of her undeniable glamour and youthful zest, she came to earn enormous respect for charity work, especially her involvement in social and health issues. Part of her concern clearly stemmed from her love of children and the importance she attached to family life. Within a year of marriage, she'd given birth to a son, Prince William. His brother, Prince Henry, known as Harry, was born a couple of years later. They appeared a happy family unit, but then speculation about their relationship began when Prince Charles spent 6 weeks on his own in Scotland, while the Princess of Wales stayed in London. The speculation reached new heights when a biography of her was published in 1992, suggesting that she was deeply unhappy and had at times been desperate during her marriage. This was dramatically confirmed in 1992 in a book by Andrew Morton, which revealed, with Diana's consent, the true sadness of her life. It was Charles who first confessed to having been unfaithful to his wife, and then she agreed to a television interview in which she admitted to interviewer Martin Bashir an earlier extramarital affair with James Hewitt, an army officer.
Did your relationship go beyond a close friendship?
Yes, it did. Yes.
Were you unfaithful?
Yes, I adored him. Yes, I was in love with him. But I was very let down.
She outlined her hopes for the future and the realization that she would now never become queen.
I'd like to be a queen of people's hearts, in people's hearts. But I don't see myself being queen of this country. I don't think many people would want me to be queen. Actually, when I say many people, I mean the establishment that I'm married into, because they've decided that I'm a non-starter.
She agreed to a divorce only after pressure from the Queen and said it was the saddest day of her life. But she continued working for her favourite charities, undertaking visits overseas for organisations like the Red Cross. The Princess of Wales began for many by being a beacon of happiness and success. Her wedding seemed to promise continued good fortune for the royal family into the next generation. But instead, the breakup of the marriage and the public recriminations helped lead to the most serious debate about the future of the monarchy in recent times. Diana was left isolated, as something of a tragic figure.
Howard Philpott looking back there on the life of the Princess of Wales, who died in a car crash in Paris. And with me in the studio is Nick Charles of the BBC. Nick, attention will inevitably have to turn, and turn very shortly, to the funeral arrangements. Do we have any idea at all what form those might take?
Well, I think that's going to be a very difficult question. I doubt if, because this has come totally out of the blue, she was a very young woman, I doubt if that has actually been gone into in great detail at the moment. And of course, she had an unprecedented position. She remained and was regarded as a member of the royal family, but as the ex-wife of the heir to the throne, that put her in a unique position. I'm sure the funeral, when it comes, will be a huge public event. Whether it will be a formal state funeral or not, I think is open to question. The likelihood, I would imagine, is that it probably will be, given the huge popularity that the Princess of Wales enjoyed. But these, I think, are questions that will be gone into in the near future.
Of course, everybody's thoughts must go out to the two still relatively young princes who've now lost their mother. Do you imagine that they will be going to Paris now?
It's very difficult to say. I think the children and Prince Charles are actually at Balmoral. I think the more likely option is that the Princess of Wales's body will be brought back from Paris. Whether Prince Charles, perhaps, or the children, perhaps the elder child, William, will go and accompany his mother's remains on their return, I think maybe a question. And obviously there will be enormous public shock at this, and I dare say that the palace will try and clarify those arrangements as soon as possible.
Nick Childs, thank you. And we're now joined by Lord Runcie, formerly the Archbishop of Canterbury, as Robert Runcie. Lord Runcie, a very bad shock, of course, for everybody, not least, indeed, the Church of England.
Yes, indeed. She was a good friend to us, and she had a tremendous interest in a variety of concerns, and her wedding is fresh in my mind and always will be, and the baptism of her children and the way in which she took it tenderly and with such potential that she had at that time.
In a sense, of course, unique circumstances when we look at the funeral arrangements, to which attention will have to be turned fairly shortly. We're speaking here of the divorced wife, after all, of the Prince of Wales. What do you think would be the appropriate arrangements here?
Well, I honestly can't say, because I'm so full of thoughts and needs to pray for them all that I certainly don't want to prescribe for them. And I think we ought to be very sensitive. There will be the family to consider, and the royal family, and something which will give some measure of consolation to the nation who had taken her to their heart.
And particular sadness, of course, for the young princes.
Yes, very much so. And they are old enough to have opinions about it, and I'm sure that they will be listened to.
Thank you very much indeed, Lord Runcie, for joining us. And we're now going back to Paris and joining our correspondent James Robbins, who is outside the hospital where the Princess of Wales was taken after the accident and where she died after surgery. James, what is the news from where you are?
Well, the news from here is really entirely somber. The grim news that it was here in the hospital of Pitié-Salpêtrière, not far from the scene of the accident, that Diana, the Princess of Wales, was formally pronounced dead some 3.5 hours after the accident happened. What I can tell you is that it appears that it took an hour and a half before the rescue services were able to free the princess from the wreckage of the Mercedes inside the tunnel and get her here to the hospital. And that obviously left the hospital authorities with a desperate fight to try to save her life. She was, we believe, alive when she arrived at the hospital, but she was suffering from massive hemorrhaging, from internal bleeding, and that brought on a heart attack, cardiac arrest. Efforts were made to revive her, a young woman after all. Efforts were made for 2 hours by two of the most senior consultants here at the hospital, two professors. But in the end, at about 4 o'clock in the morning, French time here in Paris, they had to decide that the battle to save her was over, and they formally pronounced her dead.
Are any further statements expected?
Not immediately, certainly, because I think the French authorities feel that they have given as much information as is decent about the treatment which was given to the princess, the attempts to save her life. The French Interior Minister, Jean-Pierre Chevènement, came here to the hospital to join in the news conference formally announcing her death, and he, of course, announced it on behalf of the French government. He offered his condolences to all the people of Britain and to the entire royal family on what he called a great tragedy, and said that the people of France would join in the mourning for the princess, and the British ambassador to Paris, Sir Michael Jay, was also here for that brief announcement. But we're not really expecting very much more news from the hospital. I think it's now regarded as a private matter and a private tragedy for the entire royal family, although it may be a public tragedy for the British nation and for people around the world.
James Robbins at the hospital where Princess Diana was taken. Thank you. And a short while ago, Michael Cole, a spokesman for the Harrods department store, owned by Mohammed Al-Fayed, the father of Dodi Al-Fayed, who also died, spoke of the family's grief and anger at the accident.
It's an appalling and, in Mr. Al-Fayed's mind, a quite needless tragedy. The world obviously has lost a princess who is simply irreplaceable, but Mr. Al-Fayed has lost his beloved eldest son. Mr. and Mrs. Al-Fayed are devastated by their loss, and they share the sorrow of the princess's family. Mr. Al-Fayed heard of his son's death before he left his home in Surrey to fly by helicopter to Paris, and the news of the princess's death was broken to him by Rain, Countess de Chambrun, who spoke to the hospital in Paris from Venice, where she was on holiday, and then she rang Mr. Al-Fayed. There is no doubt in Mr. Al-Fayed's mind that this tragedy would not have occurred but for the press photographers who have dogged and pursued Dodi and Princess Diana for weeks now. And this sort of pursuit is entirely unacceptable. Dodi was a kind and a gentle and a very decent man who cheered the lives of those who were fortunate enough to know him. He had a tremendous regard for the princess, and he cherished her friendship, as did all the Fayed family. Mr. Al-Fayed was a great friend of the princess's father, the late Earl Spencer. And Lord Spencer was a loyal friend to the Fayed family through thick and thin. Mr. Al-Fayed often said he regarded him as a brother, and I don't think that's an overstatement. Dodi had known the princess for more than 10 years, and they became close when the two families had a happy holiday, despite the attentions of the press, in July in Saint-Tropez. The Fayed family and the princess's family put up with a lot down in Saint-Tropez, and they did so with good humor, but they shouldn't have had to have endured that intrusion. And when it is taken onto the streets of Paris, and as it was on this occasion, then there is absolutely no justification for it. I would like to say that and Mr. Al-Fayed asked me to say that the thoughts of his family go out to the sons of Princess Diana and to the Prince of Wales and to the royal family and to the princess's sisters and brother and her mother. Also, Mr. Al-Fayed thinks of the family of the chauffeur who had worked for Hotel Ritz for many years, an excellent chauffeur, a loyal servant to the hotel, and the security man, the British chap who'd been with us for a long time. Mr. Al-Fayed's thoughts will be of that holiday they had in Saint-Tropez when they had a wonderful time together and could not possibly have foreseen this appalling, terrible day.
That was Michael Cole, a spokesman for the Harrods department store, owned by Mohammed Al-Fayed, the father of Dodi Al-Fayed, who died in the car crash in Paris along with the Princess of Wales. And now, with me in the studio is the BBC's Maurice Walsh. Maurice, no coincidence, obviously, that Dodi Al-Fayed and the Princess of Wales were in the same car. They did seem to have some kind of relationship, and there have been pictures, of course, in the papers, in particular in the tabloid press, of course, in the last few weeks to prove it. But do we have any clear idea about how deep that relationship was, what sort of relationship it really was?
No, because any detail that is known, that is in the public domain about it, has been refracted through the tabloid or the popular press. And in fact, most information that anybody in the world knows about it was brought to the world by the photographers, the kind of photographers who were in pursuit of the couple in the car in Paris last night. There have been, you heard there, Michael Cole mentioning that Dodi had known the princess for 10 years and stressing the family links in a way. And it was very clear that the Al-Fayeds, and especially quintessentially in Mohammed Al-Fayed's purchase of Harrods, although they came from Egypt, they had they were quite seriously Anglophile, and so he was stressing the links that were there over the last 10 years. But it's clear to everybody that a question of some kind of relationship, some kind of romance, has only been in public for the last 5-6 weeks.
And of course this gained even more attention among news editors, again particularly perhaps of the tabloids, because even if Dodi Al-Fayed wasn't a particularly controversial figure, his father certainly was, and people will have questioned the wisdom of the Princess of Wales being seen with his son.
Yeah, the newspaper attention focused on this idea that it was Diana's first romance since the divorce, and stressed this idea in headlines like Diana may be in love, etc. But of course the other element to it was that the person she was apparently having a relationship with, Dodi Al-Fayed, his father had already had a very controversial role in British public life by buying Harrods. He had to struggle to take over Harrods. It was challenged, and it was that business transaction became a huge public issue in the last 10 years. And then he only this year, revelations that he'd paid Conservative members of Parliament to ask questions in the House of Commons. When this was revealed, it did untold damage to the Conservative Party's campaign. And so it was the most controversial relationship possibly that she could have had.
Maurice Walsh, many thanks. And a reminder that you're tuned to a BBC World Service special. The main news, the Princess of Wales has died as a result of injuries sustained in a car crash in Paris. Her companion, Dodi Al-Fayed, was also killed. And we're going now for a summary of the rest of the world news, and here's John Stone.
The leader of the outlawed Islamic Salvation Front in Algeria says he's willing to call for an immediate end to the violence that has wrecked the country for more than 5 years. His intervention follows the latest and worst in a series of savage mass killings of civilians, blamed largely on Islamic militant groups. In a letter to the UN Secretary General, Kofi Annan, the front's leader, Sheikh Abbas Madani, said he was prepared to make the appeal to pave the way for serious dialogue to resolve Algeria's crisis. Here's our North Africa correspondent, Heba Saleh.
In his letter to the UN Secretary General, Sheikh Abbasi says he's willing to appeal for an immediate end to the bloodshed with a view to preparing the ground for what he described as serious dialogue to end Algeria's crisis. The letter is a response to Mr. Annan's statement that words of condemnation of the massacres in Algeria were not enough, and that it was necessary to find quiet and discreet means to promote a peaceful solution. Mr. Annan's statement suggests that the UN may be preparing to take an active role to help resolve the conflict in Algeria. Speaking to the BBC, Sheikh Abessi said he was confident that armed Islamic militants around Algeria would heed his appeal for peace. Analysts believe that Sheikh Abessi retains a considerable degree of influence over the Islamic Salvation Army, AIS, one of the main groups fighting the government in Algeria. The AIS has repeatedly condemned the killing of civilians and is believed to confine itself to military targets. Sheikh Abessi was unexpectedly released from prison 6 weeks ago after serving 5 years of a 12-year sentence. There was much speculation at the time that the authorities envisaged a political role for him to try to end the violence.
Israel says it will not withdraw more troops from the West Bank until the Palestinian Authority takes tougher action against militant groups. The authority says more Israeli troops are due to pull out on the 7th of September under an American brokered agreement. But a spokesman for the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, said no troops would leave because the Palestinian Authority had failed to rein in the militants after the suicide bombings in Jerusalem last month. Earlier, the Palestinian leader, Yasser Arafat, accused Mr. Netanyahu of using security as a pretext to undermine accords between Israel and the Palestinians. The senior American envoy to Bosnia-Herzegovina, Robert Gelbard, has reaffirmed support for the position of the Bosnian Serb president, Biljana Plavšić, in her power struggle with supporters of her predecessor, Radovan Karadžić. Mr. Gelbard appeared with Mrs. Plavšić in Banja Luka, after he'd delivered a warning to her enemies in Pale to comply with the Dayton Peace Accords. Ola Gerin reports from Banja Luka.
The senior U.S. envoy, Robert Gelbard, sat around the table for talks with leaders he has already called liars using terrorist tactics. The message was that they must get into line or face what he called the most serious consequences imaginable. Washington, he said, had run out of patience. After the talks, key Karadžić loyalist Momcilo Krajišnik said they had heard the message, but threats wouldn't work. History shows that threats alone have had little effect here in the past. The international community may have to do more than talk tough if it wants to subdue the hardliners in Pale. After his trip to the Karadžić stronghold, Robert Gelbard came here to Banja Luka to meet the elected president Biljana Plavšić. She may not like the Dayton Agreement, but she accepts it, and Washington is backing her to the hilt.
King Norodom Sihanouk of Cambodia has offered to mediate in peace talks between the country's warring factions, but he says this has already been rejected by the Prime Minister, Hun Sen. King Sihanouk said that if all parts of Cambodian society listened to him, a meeting could be organized immediately. The king said he could not ignore the reality that his son, Prince Norodom Ranariddh, had been deposed by his junior co-premier, Hun Sen, and that the prince's forces could not hold out much longer in their last stronghold of Osmach. But he said if that happens, the civil war in Cambodia will expand unless there are peace talks. It's been announced in Havana that the Pope will hold a mass in the city's Revolution Square during his visit to Cuba next January. However, it was not made clear whether President Fidel Castro will attend. The Pope is to spend nearly a week in Cuba and will celebrate Mass in three other places in the southeast of the country. The announcement was made by the head of the Catholic Church in Cuba, Cardinal Jaime Ortega, who was addressing hundreds of young people in one of the biggest churches in Havana. And that's the news summary.
News summary there with John Stone, and of course the main news that Princess Diana has died as a result of injuries sustained in a car crash in Paris. Tributes are already flowing in. President Bill Clinton, one of the first world leaders to pay tribute to the princess, he said he and his wife Hillary were profoundly saddened by her death. In a statement he said, "Our thoughts and prayers tonight are with her, her family, friends, and especially her children." And we're going now to Paris and to Samuel Goldsmith, a journalist with the French radio station RTL. Details have been gradually emerging of exactly what did happen in the tunnel where the accident took place. Samuel, what is the latest news that we have about exactly how the accident was caused?
Latest news is that the black Mercedes came from the Concorde place and she was heading to the western part of Paris. Apparently she was driving real fast on a wide avenue, and this avenue narrows as it penetrates into the tunnel, and inside the tunnel there's a left curve, and apparently the driver could have been surprised by this curve, and at this high speed he crashed into the wall of the tunnel. That's apparently what the police concluded after the examination of the scene.
Now, we do know that the police have arrested a number of press photographers. The suggestion is that the driver was going so fast because he was trying to get away from them, but I don't know whether that has actually been definitively concluded. Is that the case?
It hasn't been definitively concluded, but seven photographers are now at the police, main police station in Paris. They were apparently following or preceding the car with at least five motorbikes who had been towed out from the tunnel shortly after the crash.
Samuel Goldsmith in Paris, thank you for joining us. And certainly in the last few months of her life, and even a little bit before, Princess Diana had become very closely associated with the battle around the world to rid the earth of landmines. She'd become a very prominent figure in that campaign. And we're joined now by Tim Carstairs of the Mines Advisory Group. Tim, this will be a devastating blow for you.
Well, I think it's a devastating thing for anybody. And we would obviously like to offer our thoughts and our sincere condolences to Diana's children in particular and her wider family, and to Mr. Faid and his family. Yes, it is a great tragedy. We are, in fact, I mean, she has been a very compelling witness to the damage caused by landmines. She has felt it very strongly that these weapons should be banned. And in fact, I'm speaking from Oslo in Norway, where a conference begins tomorrow with over 100 countries that are about to finalize a treaty outlawing anti-personnel mines. So although I know that she was considering coming here to lend a hand, it would be probably a very fitting tribute to her great humanitarian work and to her memory if countries could actually work together and at least see this one out.
A memorial indeed. Tim Carstairs, thank you.
Thanks.
And as the news spread through Britain, people began to gather outside Buckingham Palace here in London. Our reporter Andy Tye has been speaking to those who were there to pay their respects.
As dawn broke over Buckingham Palace, members of the public began to arrive to pay their respects. First was a minicab driver from North London who laid a bouquet of flowers outside the main gates. A group of students who'd heard the news as they left a nearby club arrived carrying several roses they'd bought at an all-night shop. One of them said Diana, Princess of Wales, had been an inspiration to young people, especially in her charitable work. A few moments later, a man out walking his dog in the royal parks approached the palace gates and stood quietly for a few seconds, his head bowed. Among the growing number of people who are gathering here, there is a mood of immense sadness and, above all, of disbelief.